Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
Also next week in Iowa, Pat Brady will be hanging out with us. Pat Brady is a political guru and part of our Thursday morning roundtable on politics. And we've got a bunch of stuff this week to do as well. And later you're going to help explain what the caucuses are and how they are different from a primary and stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll make it fun because there's quite a big difference for those who aren't familiar with caucuses.
Nothing like Des Moines in February for fun. Robert Gates' new book is called A Passion for Leadership, Lessons on Change and Reform from 50 Years of Public Service. You know, Gates looks good for an old guy. He does. You know, he's 72 years old.
He does look good. I wouldn't say that's old.
Former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, author of Duty, amongst other things. Sir, can you hear me okay?
Thank you.
And
happy to be with you.
You look good for an old guy.
Well, thanks. I guess that's a backhanded compliment.
No, you really do. You look great. Your health is good, I assume?
It is. It is. I'm stuck here in Washington, D.C., looking at all the snow, but other than that.
Yeah, make somebody else shovel.
Yeah.
The new book, A Passion for Leadership, lays out over the course of your 50-plus years in public service what you've learned, mistakes made, successes had, and how others can benefit from it, right?
Absolutely. I got to the end of my career, and when I stepped down at Defense, I looked back and saw the number of institutions that I'd led and the changes that I had brought about and the reforms, and decided that the lessons I had learned working under eight presidents were probably worth passing along, because we have so many institutions at every level of government and even in the private sector that are underperforming or even broken. And a lot of people are just sort of resigned to the fact that it'll always be that way, whether it's Veterans Affairs or the Water Department in Flint, Michigan. And my position is that I've been there and done that, and you can change these organizations. You can fix them, and it's all about working with other people, listening, figuring out what's wrong, and then developing an action plan and implementing it.
Can you be the president of the United States, the most powerful job in the universe, and be leadership challenged?
I think you can, because it has to do with, you know, are you able to form the coalitions and reach out to other people in putting together a broad base of support for accomplishing things. And even in very polarized times, we have had presidents who have been able to do that. And, you know, this notion that it's sort of my way or the highway just doesn't work in American politics. And so the question is, in a polarized environment like this, can we elect a president who tones down the partisanship and reaches out across the aisle to the Congress and in the country as a whole, and basically talks about our common destiny and the fact that we're all in this together.
And we're just not hearing almost any of that. I want to get to that in a second, but first, in the course of reading your book, pardon me, a couple of things that really jumped out. Your Defense Department time included, and I respect your honesty, your Defense Department time included shaking up the budgets because, as I think you point out specifically, almost word for word in the book, nobody wastes money like the Defense Department. There's a story in here about a presidential helicopter, which is mind-boggling. Can you pick that up?
Well, I'm one of the 36 major procurement programs that I killed in 2009 was a new presidential helicopter, which was a case study in a procurement gone terribly wrong, and there were a lot of people responsible for it, from people on the White House staff to the Navy Department to other parts of the Department of Defense and the contractor. But we ended up, when it was all said and done, I went in to tell President Obama if he was prepared to fly in a helicopter that was going to cost $1 billion for a single helicopter.
$1 billion, one machine.
Exactly. And we were going to buy a half a dozen or 10 of them. And I said, you know, this thing's going to cost $1 billion. The good news is that it's got a galley in it, so you can cook up a meal in the middle of a nuclear war if you want to. Anyway, he allowed us how he didn't want to do that, and so supported me in cutting that program. But there were about three dozen like that I cut too.
Andrea, say hi to Secretary Gates.
Hi, Secretary Gates. You've served. You've fascinating career and life. You've served eight presidents. What do you think is one of the biggest threats to America today? I know there's so many out there, ISIS, Iran, North Korean nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and specifically in regards to the book of these current crop, is anybody qualified to lead?
Yeah. Well, I think, in all honesty, I think the biggest threat to America's future today is found within the 2 square miles that encompass the Capitol building and the White House, because if we can't figure out a way to begin to address some of our problems here in this country and move the country forward, there really is no single foreign threat that poses a greater threat to us than our own economic and political problems. And the failure, in the last 10 years, the Defense Department had an enacted appropriations bill just twice, and that was 9 and 10 years ago. And between continuing resolutions, government shutdowns, sequestration, and all these other manifestations of failure, if we can't fix all that, there's none of these foreign threats that I think pose a comparable threat.
Talking to Robert M. Gates, former defense secretary, amongst your many, many jobs, a passion for leadership, lessons on change and reform from 50 years of public service. As always, get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. I'm a big fan of Spy Masters, a documentary running on Showtime. You ran the CIA for a year and a half prior to President Clinton being elected. How do you balance leadership and secrecy as opposed to leadership and transparency?
Well, I think that transparency is very important if you want to lead change. And so while I couldn't go public with a lot of the changes that I was making at CIA and in the intelligence community at the end of the Cold War, I was able to be very transparent within the intelligence community and with the leaders of the other intelligence agencies and in effect make them my allies in reorienting the intelligence community to a different, very different kind of world. So sometimes you can be transparent with the public, but you can always be transparent with your own people, and as you go about making change, I argue in the book that transparency and inclusiveness are absolutely critical to long-term success.
I don't know how to ask you this last question without asking if you're endorsing anyone, and that's certainly not what I'm looking for. But we all want to know who is best equipped as a leader to handle the security of America. And I know you said it's like the old horror movie. We trace the call. They're in the House. Congress and others are our biggest threat. But is anybody on either side, Democrat or Republican, showing good leadership qualities in regards to protecting America?
Well, I will just say that I will just say that I think that of the entire panoply of people running, there are maybe two or three that I think have the leadership skills to be able to be potentially a successful president based on my experience. And no, I'm not going to say who they are.
I'm guessing they're not named Trump.
I'm not saying who they are.
Look, you can't fault me for trying. Come on, man.
Nope, not at all.
Robert M. Gates, I wish you well. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.
A passion for leadership, lessons on change and reform from 50 years of public service, and the author of several books, including the book Duty, which was more of a memoir of Gates. He's seen it, and he's done most of it. And I agree with a lot of what he says, not all of what he says. But he came out very publicly a week or so ago and has sort of quieted those comments, talking about how Cruz and Trump in particular are clueless when it comes to defense. And carpet bombing civilians isn't going to accomplish anything. And advocating is, I've said several times here, committing war crimes and killing the wife and children of terrorists isn't going to accomplish anything either.
No. How about what he said, too? Basically, we're our biggest threat to ourselves.
We trace the call. They're in the House and in the Senate.
Oh, God.